welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio 89.1, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. I am one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Paul Wearson. Hi, Paul.
Hello, Susan. Our show today focuses on the northern part of our listening area, about a new health program called Story City Shape Up. Then we'll talk about a regional plan to improve conditions in the Squaw Creek watershed. And we have Susan Duke, whose book, The Skunk River Tales, Mystery in the Park, was just released in January. Then Sean Stevenson will be giving us a preview of the Ames Children's Choir concert in Randall at Elam Lutheran Church, which will be this Sunday. Well, now, some Story City residents are spending the next 3 months eating healthier foods and moving their bodies more as part of a new initiative called Story City Shape Up. Betsy Bowman, a volunteer with the Story City Greater Chamber of Commerce and Connection, is here to provide us with the details. Welcome to our show, Betsy.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, explain to us how that came to be, the Story City Shape Up program.
Well, Story City Shape Up is a simple health and wellness program that was brought to the residents and community members of the Story City area by the Greater Chamber Connection. We are sponsored in part by the United Way of Story County, and we are endorsed by the Healthy Estate Initiative. And so it was just a great idea that we had to try and engage our community residents to be more healthy and to enjoy wellness in very simple ways. We're not asking them to completely overhaul their lifestyle, but just make simple changes that allow them to live longer, healthier lives.
Sounds like a good idea. And I'm reminding the listener now that the Iowa Healthy Estate Initiative is a privately led initiative to make Iowa the healthiest state in the nation by 2016. Progress is measured by the Gallup Healthways Wellbeing Index. Iowa rated number 10 in 2013. Now, how is the Story City Shape Up program structured, Betsy?
That's a great question. Thank you for asking. We started last week, and we started out the program with goal-setting sessions. And our partners at the Lifetime Fitness Center were kind enough to allow us into their facility, as well as to meet with their personal trainers to talk to participants about creating SMART goals, specific, measurable, actionable, relevant, and timely goals specific to their situation. We have participants that are active at different levels, some that have been more sedentary the last several years, others that are uber active. So it was a great opportunity for them to figure out what would work for them going forward. Participants also get a pedometer so they can track their daily movement. And then one of the most exciting portions of the program is our Fresh Friday Luncheon Series. We had our first one last week, and over half of our participants showed up to take part. We featured a local area dietitian, Aaron Nelson, who gave a great presentation on diet myths and busting those diet myths. So turns out carbs aren't as scary as everyone wants to believe, and that some fat is good for you. So she gave a great presentation that really helped our participants get started off on the right foot. This week, we'll have another Fresh Friday Lunch featuring Shelley Woodall, who's going to talk about My Plate, which is a recent introduction that came from Michelle Obama on building a plate that is actually truly healthy for you and balanced. Our participants also get wellness passports that encourage them to try a new activity every day. In February, if they complete 80% of those activities, including those that are required, which is notated on their passport, they can turn in that passport at the end of the month, and then they are eligible to enter a drawing to win prizes. In March, it gets a little bit harder. They then have to do 85% of the activities, and in April, 90%. So really trying to encourage just small daily change that gets them up and moving. They also get a T-shirt, a drawstring bag full of a lot of educational material, including a Walking for Wellness book. We also this morning had our Story City Shape Up Power Hour class also at Lifetime Fitness Center, where participants could come in and try out a new dynamic workout. We have two more of those, first Wednesday of every month. We also have open gym sessions for them to participate, where we will have various activities planned for them, including next week, which is a sampler class, and then Zumba dance parties. And at the end of the program, we'll have the Viking Games and 5K, which will be really exciting. exciting. We're thinking tug of war. We're thinking human foosball. Just really exciting games to get people up and active.
Is there a time frame for this Shape Up program?
Yes. So it started last week, and it'll run until the end of April. So it is a 3-month initiative.
And everyone has their own personal goals in this program.
Exactly. Tailored specifically to them. So it could be something like me. I'm thinking I want to do an unassisted pull-up versus some people just want to make time to work out 3 times per week. So it really depends on the person and what they are wanting to achieve.
And it sounds so non-threatening.
Exactly.
You know, there are so many people who are frightened about various things about physical activity. Number one, showing up. And fearful of being criticized or judged by somebody who's in top shape. You know, they look at, there's the instructor, and she or he are wonderful and beautifully built and can run 10 miles in their sleep. But this is not intimidating, is it?
Not intimidating at all. This isn't designed to be, you know, CrossFit seems to be all the rage or the biggest buzz lately. This isn't a CrossFit-type program. It's not, we're not going to turn you into running a mile in 6 minutes overnight. We're just simply trying to encourage anyone, regardless of age, regardless of physical activity level, to try something new, to make small changes in their life that are easy and can help make them a healthier person.
Now, do they need to be certified by a physician as being safe doing this activity or anything like that?
I would definitely recommend that anyone seek out their doctor's approval if this is going to be a truly radical change. You know, if you're already moderately active and have some type of fitness, it's definitely an easy enough program to transition into. But if you have been more sedentary, absolutely, I would encourage you to talk to your doctor about those types of things.
And there's been a sign-up already, so how many people have signed up so far?
So this is our first year for doing the program, and so far we have 63 registrants.
63?
Which I think is a pretty great number.
And you're not even one of them, is that right?
He'll be signing up when we finish today.
Well, I sure hope that a lot of folks out there who are in Story City or its environs will hear our program today and come and see you, Betsy, about this program. Now, how did you get involved?
Well, I am the promotions chair for the Story City Greater Chamber Connection, and so this initiative fell underneath my committee. And for me personally, I have a family that unfortunately has a lot of heart disease, and I'm just genetically predisposed to those types of issues. So being healthy and active is something that is near and dear to my heart. So this was a great passion project for me to take on. And that's really why I stepped up and agreed to help run this initiative for us.
Now, are we beyond the deadline? Is it too late to sign up for this?
No. We have so much content still to take place over the next, you know, roughly 80 days, 85 days or so. I would definitely encourage anyone to sign up. We have plenty of T-shirts and welcome bags and can get you introduced to the program and off and running very quickly.
So anyone can come in, even when the program has already begun, and hit the ground running.
Absolutely. There's plenty of time to take advantage of this great program and really see the benefit of these small daily changes that you can make.
Well, I think one of the best things about this program is educating people about the interaction between your body and what you eat, and probably disposing with a lot of myths that people carry around about weight loss activity, what happens in your body when you increase your physical activity. And there are so many things out there that's in the media that are confusing people and misleading people, and there are so many articles published, too, that can conflict with each other, contradict each other. And I think when you're involved with a program like this and around real live human beings who are giving you guidance, you're probably doing a pretty reality-based thing. And so I really think this is great. And I'm really impressed that there are 63 people signed up already. And what you see there is a cross-section of ages, and what's happening in that one?
Yes, we have a wide variety of ages that are signed up, a wide variety of physical fitness levels. It was really great sitting at the Lunch and Learn last week and looking at all the various different participants. And like you referenced, the ages and the activity levels, it's just great to see such a cross-section engaged in the program.
I really like to hear that because there are so many different people in terms of body shape and condition and age. It's good that everyone feels non-threatened about this and willing to step forward. Now, is there a cost to participate in this program?
There is, and that covers your goal-setting session, the pedometer, the lunches, your participation in all of the Story City Shape-Up activities. And the pedometer even measures your aerobic steps versus your non-aerobic, so you can see how truly cardiovascular your day has been in terms of getting your heart rate up and being active. So it's a great little tool.
That is wonderful. Is it going to be offered next year, too?
We are definitely planning to make this an annual program. Obviously, we're starting with 63 participants, and our goal going forward would be to grow that number. I mean, I would love to see 100% participation from our residents in Story City and surrounding communities. So I have big goals ahead.
Well, yeah, I hope I might be the kind of person who'd cheat, put it on my pedometer, and run around my bedroom four times.
Hey, that is still getting you up and active.
I'm still active, right? Well, now, how can people get more information from the Story City or the folks who might be interested?
Well, sure. You can definitely contact the chamber office. You can visit storycity.net. There is a sign-up page available there with all the information about the program. And we also have a Facebook page. You can simply search for Story City Shape-Up and get more information there.
Well, I think you've hit on something really special, and that is it's very difficult to do a regimen or a program on your own. It's a sense of community. Everybody's in this together, and let's see what we can do. And thank you very much today, Betsy, for being here. Betsy Bowman from the Story City Shape Up program, and that was fun.
You are listening to Local Talk that connects community through communication. We've been speaking with Story City Greater Chamber Connection Promotions Chair, and she's been telling us about Story City Shape Up. And now,
here we have journalist and local talk contributor, Loris Olson. She's joining our station. And Loris, how are you today?
I am fine. Hello to both of you. I'm excited to work with you, Paul, for the first time.
Well, it's good to meet you today.
We're going to talk about Squaw Creek and the Squaw Creek watershed today. Squaw Creek begins in Webster County, close to the intersection of 330th Street and Tunnel Mill Road. 30 miles south as the crow flies, it joins with the Skunk River in southeast Ames. In between, 12 smaller creeks, a large drainage ditch, and a short tributary contribute to its flow. Representatives from the 10 government subdivisions whose 230 square miles of surface and groundwaters drain into Squaw Creek have spent 2014 working with consultants to analyze the deteriorating quality of the creek and create a plan for reversing the decline. The group, officially called the Squaw Creek Watershed Authority, issued the Squaw Creek Watershed Management Plan in December. Ames-based Prairie Rivers of Iowa was part of the consulting team headed by Emmons and Oliver Resources, a Minnesota company. Prairie Rivers Executive Director Penny Brown Huber is on the telephone with us to recap what the group found and lay out the plan they hope to put into action. Welcome, Penny. Thank you for making time for us today.
Oh, thank you, Loris, for inviting me today. I appreciate it.
Well, let's do a little bit of background, and then we'll move into the plan itself. I'd like to spend most of the time this morning talking about the plan. But let's first of all identify what the government entities were that are included in the Squaw Creek Watershed Management Authority.
Yeah, so this was an opportunity for sort of an interesting mix to come together under what they call a 28E agreement. So we have Boone County, Story County, Hamilton County. We've got the soil and water conservation districts from those three counties, and then the City of Ames, City of Gilbert, and the City of Stanhope all have representatives on this this watershed board.
Okay. What about the City of Stratford and Webster County?
Right. Yep. Yeah, so thank you for that. Yeah, the City of Stratford is kind of interesting because the watershed really just touches the edge of Stratford, but they're part of that agreement too. And then Webster County, at this time, if I remember my history a little bit, they're kind of on a wait-and-see kind of participation. We keep them informed, but they don't have an active member.
Okay. What are some of the findings from the Emmons and Oliver resources, all of the study, all of the analysis work that they took? What are the findings that most concerned the authority members?
So what we had to do was really kind of wrestle with how to approach even the process for understanding the problem. One of the really great things that's happened over the last 20 to 30 years with the Squaw Creek watershed is there's been a lot of testing done in the watershed, and partly from volunteer monitoring, some from Iowa State University and all the different projects they've done in the watershed. Having the ability to have a lot of testing data turned out to be really critically important, and it's something that that the public needs to think about, because right now the state monitoring is not really being funded very well at the DNR and IDOLS, and it's something that we really need to have happen so we can understand the problem. It's, you know, part of the water issues is just understanding the problem so we can then really tackle it, each one of us, as a citizen of Iowa. So we wanted to go in, and we started looking at the data, which really was mostly focused around water quality issues, and then looking at how to, you know, what were the tools that we had that we could begin to tackle it. Now, water quality can't be improved in one day or a month or a year even. We knew it was going to have to be at least a 20-year plan to begin to remediate the problem. So part of...
Well, Penny,
go ahead.
Let me ask you, before we talk about the 20-year plan, I did take a look at the website, where your website, where the plan is posted, along with all of the background research and statistics that Emmons and Oliver Resources did. And I just pulled a couple of numbers. For example, phosphorus was 3 to 5 times higher than the Environmental Protection Agency's eco-region reference point. Then we had E. coli was often 3 to 7 times higher. Nitrogen was often 2 to 4 times higher.
Right.
As a result of this, what does this mean for citizens who want to go ahead and either recreate in Squaw Creek or live near Squaw Creek? What do these numbers mean for them?
You know, basically, we have a situation where the water is dirty. And what we'd like to see through the 20 years is to try to get the nitrogen levels down to a state standard. And it'll probably take a good 20 years to do that, you know, working with buffers and cover crops, and most of the nitrogen has to be remediated in the agricultural lands. The phosphorus is different. Phosphorus levels are higher in the urban settings, and so we need to kind of work with landowners, homeowners, folks that live near the stream, to try to reduce the phosphorus levels. And in our plan right now, we don't believe we can reach a state standard in 20 years on phosphorus. It will take longer than that. But we think we can probably cut the phosphorus in the water right now about in half.
Why do you think it will take you at least 20 years?
There's a lot of different ways in which we have to kind of tackle the different, so there's different tools that we can use on the landscape. Some of them work quicker than others, right? So if we want to put in a buffer and plant it with grasses and trees, and, you know, that's going to take a little bit longer to mature so that soil isn't sloughing off into the stream. We have to find ways to gate out livestock so that farmers can get their livestock fed water that they need, but at the same time not have them standing in the stream. And so these issues are complicated. They take a while to plan for, and then they take a while to foot onto the landscape, and then they have to grow. So, and we're very interested in putting in along the stream a recreation corridor, because there used to be a greater recreation corridor with the Squaw Creek. They actually used to fish quite a bit in the stream. And now with the stream flows being, you know, we all see it, like sometimes there's almost no water in the stream, and then there's too much water in the stream. And so if we're able to sort of build off of the banks and create sort of a wildlife corridor where there's more grasses, more trees, a way for us to enjoy maybe a trail, and then ideally it will lead to more fishing, and that will also help, you know, because it's not just the stream, but it's also how it integrates into our lives so that we can enjoy that natural resource.
I am speaking with Penny Brown Huber, the executive director of Prairie Rivers of Iowa. The Ames nonprofit is a consultant for the Squaw Creek Watershed Management Authority, which recently finalized a plan they hope will improve the water quality in the watershed and in Squaw Creek. Penny, you talked about different strategies for different groups, and you talked about agricultural versus the urban. That was a key point, was it not, in the listening sessions, that there seemed to be different goals and a little bit of different pointing of fingers about who really was contributing the most to the problem?
Well, we had some very interesting listening sessions on in the beginning, and our point there was to try to hear what people's concerns were, what their interests were. For us at Prairie Rivers, what we really believe is that everybody has to get educated about water, and we have to sort of raise the knowledge. We have to understand how we, each of us, can make a difference, because we each contribute to the water quality issues in some ways. If we can improve water quality, we're going to also then be able to reduce water quantity. So hopefully flooding in different areas along the watershed would get reduced as we improve water quality. And that has to do with, you know, putting in buffers and cover crops and increasing, you know, the ability for the soil to keep the water in place. So I really don't think about, trying to point out our differences as much as I'm really thinking about how do we educate everybody, lift everybody up to understand the problem, and then look and see where we can begin to fix the problem. Because, you know, I just think Iowans are so resilient. We can fix this problem. It doesn't require having a big battle, or it has to do a lot with communication and knowledge and having the right tools, which I think we have. We have the right tools if people understand them.
The authority members created specific goals and then objectives. Can you tell us some of the specific goals, some of those objectives that they want to achieve within the next 20 years?
Sure, yeah. So we know that one of the critical pieces is going to be to hire a watershed coordinator. And one of the really important pieces that I felt the board really embraced and understood was we also need to hire a watershed educator. So typically, these two positions would be in one person, which makes the job just enormous. But in our case, we actually have split them out and are really committed to identifying two different folks. And in fact, I've submitted a grant to the Iowa Department of Agriculture for funding of these two positions, which we hope will happen later this year. We will be looking at ways in which we can begin to put different types of practices on the land to help with this issue of water quality. So we've actually, in this grant, also requested funds for helping landowners purchase cover crops to put on their land, maybe rewarding for no-till practices, crop rotation, putting in buffers, looking at some kind of prairie or perennial strips to help with the maybe a landscape is can have, you know, sort of a waviness or a hilliness to it, and maybe some kind of grassway would help. So
it sounds like It sounds like a comprehensive plan that's been put together. When I also think it might cost a few dollars to do this. So can you give us an idea of the amount for the grant?
Yeah, so the recent grant that I applied for was for $920,000. A majority of that would be trying to help put these practices in place. We also have a great commitment from the City of Ames and from Story County supervisors to put two water quality monitors in the stream so that we can take data daily out of the stream to see, you know, what's happening with nutrients on a daily basis. And that will continue to inform us and add to our knowledge, you know, about what's happening with the water.
And that component that the City and the Story County Board of Supervisors are offering up, how much more is that estimated to contribute to the cost of the project?
Well, that's one of the things about the grant I applied for. It requires a match. And the City of Ames and Story County Supervisors, they stepped forward to help with that. Those water quality monitors will cost about somewhere between $10,000 and $15,000. To put in place. And then, you know, of course, then there's the daily taking of the data and then the evaluation of it, which we've actually put into the grant some costs for that. So Emmons and Oliver are going to continue to help us with the evaluation of data over the next 3 years.
Among those goals, you talked already about maybe a trail, additional recreational opportunities through restarting the fishery. But didn't the committee also take a look at looking at the variety of the habitat along the Squaw Creek as far as the plants and the animals?
Yeah, so there used to be more diversity of plants and animals, and we would like to begin to see that sort of reestablished. It's kind of interesting when you look at a watershed plan, you know, they not only count livestock, but they count dogs and cats and skunks and rabbits. And our diversity has really been reduced because that stream corridor is pretty small now. So I think we would find that the trail would really help engage the public, and then also that habitat for animals and plants would be really interesting for all of us. You know, it would kind of enrich our lives. So the Story County Conservation is doing, they have a master trail plan they're starting to work on, and we would hope, too, that we could work then with Boone, Story, Hamilton to think about a trail plan for Squaw Creek watershed.
I noticed that some of the objectives in the plan were very concrete. For example, there's a goal to lower phosphorus within the next 20 years by a certain percentage. It's measurable. You know you're able to track it. Other goals and objectives are a little bit less concrete, and I saw one that fascinated me. Objective is identify and empower local watershed stewards to build watershed management ethic at the grassroots level. So tell us, who is a local watershed steward?
I hope it would be every single one of us. That's what I would hope. So when we were talking about that, we looked at some different watershed stewards kinds of programs around the country. I think there's lots of ways that we can honor folks that are doing the right thing, look at maybe educators and how they're teaching about it, maybe engage children, and then have a chance to kind of honor that kind of work. So the watershed coordinator and the new education coordinator will be one of the tasks they will have, which is to kind of begin to develop a program where we can talk about what folks are doing, how they're doing it, and then honor all their good work. And then we'll get a chance to celebrate.
Well, speaking of good work, the amount of information and the way it was presented during the last year was exceptional. So I want to congratulate you. I want to congratulate the Emmons and Oliver Resources Group, because we were dealing with very technical information often, and they were able to bring it down to a this is your daily life level. And I see that also on everything that is posted on your website. So people can go and look at this information. And I'd like you to go ahead and give the website where people can go to.
So you can go to Prairie Rivers of Iowa, which is www.prrcd.org. And there is a link to look at our programs, and then it will take you straight to Squaw Creek Watershed.
Is there anything else that you'd like to leave our listeners thinking about?
Yeah, I think that one of the things that everyone needs to know is this plan for the Squaw Creek Watershed is the first time anything like this has actually been produced. It's really a state-of-the-art plan. We're going to be presenting it at the Iowa Water Quality Conference in Ames at the early part of March. I think it's the 2nd or the 3rd. A lot of other watersheds around the state are looking at our plan, asking questions. So it's a really great opportunity for our area to lead the state on starting to implement watershed practices. Quite proud of that, actually.
Good work to everyone. I'd like to thank you, Penny Brown Huber, Executive Director of Prairie Rivers of Iowa. She accommodated us. This Prairie Rivers is a consultant to the Squaw Creek Watershed Management Authority, which has created this plan for improving Squaw Creek. Thank you, Penny.
You bet. Thank you so much, too.
You have been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. In case you just tuned in, Local Talk contributor and journalist Doris Olson has been interviewing Penny Brown Huber about the Squaw Creek Watershed Improvement Plan, something few of us recognize, but which affects us every day, but especially after heavy rains. Thanks to both of you for making us aware of the importance of a healthy watershed. After we've been aware of becoming healthy people with Story City Shape Up. And after a little music, we'll be hearing about another way to enjoy Squaw Creek. So far, we've been talking about improving our health and the rivers around us. Now we have S.V. Duke with us to tell us how she used the Skunk River to tell a story. Paul, since you're from Story City, too, you should be the one to find out about the Skunk River Tales, Mystery in the Park, from their author.
Well, we are indeed honored, and it's a great pleasure to have our author today, Susan Duke. It's the Skunk River Tales Mystery in the Park. I already have my nightlight on. Now, how did you begin writing, Susan? What was your inspiration to become a writer?
Well, when I was younger, I had a wild imagination like any child. And I had a very bad habit of staying awake nights. Just like I wasn't a very good sleeper. I wasn't necessarily an insomniac, but I would get really wound up and not want to go to sleep. So I would come up with these stories that would kind of calm me down. And eventually, over time, those stories started to shape up, and I started thinking about stuff when I was awake, you know, not trying to get to sleep. And my dad encouraged me to write. I was homeschooled, and he was my creative writing teacher. And I started reading a lot when I got into junior high and high school, and I really liked the idea of writing stories, but I never really went anywhere until I had this dream one night. And it was this really, really cool dream, and I decided I'm going to write that into a book. So that was the very first book I ever wrote. It's sitting on a shelf somewhere now, and it's not really ready for publication or anything.
I know, but it's just like Harper Lee. You know, what's in the news right now. Someday it'll be worth $1 million if someone just digs it up. Well, how did you come to Story City?
Well, my dad retired about 6-7 years ago, and he decided that in his retirement he wanted to move to a place that was less crowded, because I was originally from the East Coast. And my brother had come here to school at ISU, and when my dad visited the state with him for the freshman orientation, he decided, well, I'm going to look in Iowa. I like the looks of things. It's a lot quieter there. And he went to a real estate office and asked the lady there, what's a good town? I want a town that's able to support itself, but still small enough that we can walk to things. And she said, why not try Story City?
I love to hear that because I've definitely tried Story City. I live on a farm 2 miles south of Story City. So how did you get the idea for the location and coming up with the characters? Everyone wants to know how you build a book from the standpoint of creating the characters and the situation. Well, how did that happen? And who are these people?
Well, it started out as I was just kind of interested in writing a children's book. I like to diversify my writing. I don't want to just cater to one audience. And I was thinking, well, it'd be kind of interesting to write a book about children. And I was talking to a girl, her name's Talia Snyder. She actually is one of the characters in the book. And I just got the inspiration from talking to her. I was like, I really ought to write a kid's book. And somewhere along the lines, I decided I wanted to write it about Story City and the children that I had met through different community activities.
And so that gave birth to the idea of the characters and location. Now, without giving away too much, what's the mystery about?
Well, it's about these, mainly it's about the three boys, Junior, Hunter, and Eli, and Talia's in a good portion of it as well. They are going to the Story City Park. They like to go fishing there and play in the park, and it starts off with them finding this shirt, and they're like kind of confused about it, and it's got some strange writing on it, and they think, oh, well, there might be a criminal hiding out in the park. And they start finding these other clues that convince them that there is one. So now they have to try to figure out a way to trap him.
Wow. The plot thickens. Well, what's the intended audience for your book?
It's roughly around junior high age. I tried to keep it short so younger kids could read it. But it's anywhere from 8 to 13. It depends on the reading level.
Now, I suppose everybody's interested in this because everyone has a dream. How did you get published?
Well, my first book that I published, Seasons of the Heart, I did that as a self-publish through CreateSpace on Amazon. And then with Mystery in the Park, I wanted to do something that was with a regular publisher because I'm really not good at advertising. Marketing was definitely not my thing. So I went with Tay Publishing. What you have to do with that is you have to go online and submit the manuscript to them, and then they have to approve it. And then if they accept your manuscript, you sign a contract, and then they take you through all the stuff.
So you went through that with Seasons of the Heart. And you were successful with that.
Well, Seasons of the Heart was with Create Space. Okay. Mystery in the Park was with Tate.
And now you've gotten the approval. You're published. Someone with a green eye shade and a cigar looked over this script, said manuscript, and said, wow, this is terrific. And now you're published. So far, how's it gone? Reception you're getting? Have you had any feedback from the publication, or is it just so new that we don't know yet?
Well, it's still really new. I haven't really gotten to talk to many people about it.
Well, now, are you going to go on talk shows and like you are right now promote this thing?
That would be nice. I'm not the best at going on air, the radio and TV and stuff. I'm not a very great talker, so.
Well, I hope you're going to be distributing this book in libraries and schools and that sort of thing. And just a slice out of my week, every Monday I go to Roland Story Elementary and I mentor a couple of boys. And then I go into the second grade and it gets interesting. I read the books, you know, and show them the pictures and all that. And then each day we pick a child, boy on one week and girl on the next, and we pick them to be a hero. Then it's up to me to come up with a story featuring them as the hero that relates to that book. So I have to be on my toes. But that's enough about me. What's really happening there in that transaction is the kids just look up with their eyes lit up, and they're waiting for the next thing. And I think universally in any language, when someone says, once upon a time, everybody settles in for a marvelous time. What do you think, Susan?
I think they do. And, of course, a story that's about you is just really exciting. So those kids in Story City who are in the book, are they really excited about this?
Well, some of them, actually, I never got the chance to tell them that they were in it because I met them through the community theater in Story City, and I haven't seen them since publishing the book.
So the first hint they're going to have that they were in the book is when they get the call from David Letterman. Well, I hope they each get their copy to cherish forever. And if you're written about in the book, it's a form of immortality, you know.
Even if the names are changed.
That's right. Yeah. To protect the innocent.
Like right. But I'd like to mention something about your publicity, because I went online last night and I was amazed at just how many different places I could find the Skunk River Tales and, you know, Facebook and other references. So I think that Tate Publishing is doing a good job of promoting your book. So
now, Susan, if someone wanted a copy of The Skunk River Tales, how would they do that right away?
Well, it's available on Amazon, of course.
Good, good.
And you can also get it through TatePublishing.com. You just type it in as TatePublishing.com/bookstore, and that'll take you directly to the bookstore portion of their website.
Wow. We know a lot more than when we got up this morning, thanks to Susan Duke. And that is The Skunk River Tales, Mystery in the Park. And I hope everybody has a chance to read that. And it sounds like a great gift for your middle school niece, nephew, and all that sort of thing. And it may appear soon at the Roland Story Elementary School, and I might be able to read it. That's great. I'm stuck in second grade forever, you know.
Well, I thought you were fifth grade.
No, I teach fifth graders public speaking, but when it comes to books and literature, I'm stuck in the second grade. Well, thank you, Susan Duke, author of The Skunk River Tales, Mystery in the Park.
Thank you for having me.
And we're going to be having Sean Stevenson talking to us about the Ames Children's Choir concert, which will be in the Elam Lutheran Church. And we'll just have a little bit of the children's choir to get us into the mood.
now it's going to be fun right now because we're going to be talking with Sean Stevenson about the Ames Children's Choirs. They have a concert coming up at Elam Lutheran Church in Randall this Sunday at, I believe, 3 p.m. Are you on the line, Sean?
Yes, that's correct, 3 p.m., Paul.
And I love that locale. Give us a little thumbnail sketch of the history of the Ames Children's Choirs.
Well, actually, this is our 20th anniversary. The choirs began in 1995. And I went back and I checked, and we first performed at Elam Lutheran Church for this Randall Fine Arts Series in 1997. So we've been doing that concert for quite a few years. And that's a chance for us to move out of the Ames area and expose some of the people north of Ames to the children's choirs.
Well, you know, I'm one of the folks who've been at that concert every year. Sometimes I've emceed that and introduced the choir. And, of course, Sylvia Munson, a family that we know very well in Story City, was the founder of the Children's Choir.
That's correct. And in light of our 20th anniversary, she's coming back. We're bringing
that's
her
great
back
news.
In May.
Good
she's
news.
Moved, she's moved to Utah, but she's coming back for our 20th anniversary.
I am thrilled to hear that.
Celebration.
Oh, I'm thrilled to hear that. That's great. It'll be great to see Sylvia again, and I'm really anticipating the concert. Tell us about Elam Lutheran Church. What's the great thing about having a concert there?
Well, it's a lovely space, and the good acoustics for the kids, and it just works out well for our kids. They have, you know, a built-in step kind of stage at the front of the church and piano there. It's just a very good space for us to perform in. And so we encourage anybody in that area to come on over Sunday, February 15th at 3 p.m. and listen to the choirs. We'll have two of our choirs performing individually and together, our chorale and our concert choir. And we actually have three choirs in the program that are age-based from age 8 up to 18. And these are our two older choirs, so primarily children ages 10 to 12 in the chorale, and then 12 on up in the concert choir.
I did not know it went that high in age. That's a revelation to me.
Yeah, we have to have unchanged voices because it's just soprano alto bass. So once the boys' voices drop, we don't have a choir for them. But we've had young women stay in the choir until they graduate from high school.
Yes, you know, the history of children's choirs, particularly boys' choirs, goes way back to the medieval times.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just something about a boy's voice. Tell me about the history of that. It's a prized thing. It's a sort of a unique sound, isn't it?
Well, even with the girls, I feel like it's kind of an angelic sound. It's a very gentle sound compared to the richness and depth that you get once your voice matures as an adult. And so it's a completely different sound that I've kind of grown to love over the years being surrounded by the choirs. I'm in my 11th season with the choirs working for them. And so it's just, I guess I can't describe it any other way than saying angelic.
That is a good description, come to think of it. And, you know, that's such a unique sound. And I love the recordings of the Vienna Boys Choir and all this sort of thing. And is there a difference between the male and female voice when they're prepubescent, or is it pretty much the same?
Well, most of our boys are singing the alto part, and their voices don't have the range that some of the girls' voices do. But it's a similar sound, actually, between the boys and the girls at that age.
Now, how do young people get involved? I know you see audition notices in the paper, and you have quite a turnout for that, I bet, don't you?
We have auditions that we hold in May for the following year, and we also hold auditions in August. So our next season will be the 2015-16 season. We kind of follow a school calendar year where we meet from September to May, and then we're off during the summer months. But we just held some auditions in January for the second semester and picked up some singers who might not have been aware of the choirs or who were interested in singing. And the Ames Children's Choirs is an extracurricular event. It's a nonprofit organization, but it's for children who enjoy singing. So if your child is singing around the home or singing in the car or something, this might be a good option for them to add some additional instruction along those lines, because we find some people who sing as a child in a choir
enjoy singing for the rest of their lives.
Wow.
And it's just
music
is a powerful thing, and it's just wonderful for these kids to carry that with them through their entire life.
So no one is dragging a child kicking and screaming to auditions.
Oh,
these are already kids who've demonstrated that they are interested and motivated and, as you say, probably sing at home, almost like an involuntary response. They already are interested in vocalizing, right?
That's right. That's correct.
And I think the main thing here is that we tend to underestimate what children can do, how much focus they're capable of doing on a task, and the musical acuity they have, and the ability to discipline themselves to do very challenging things. Would you say that's true of the Ames Children's Choir?
That is true, and it's true for anything. You know, the effort that is put in produces results. And so if the kids work hard, they get the results, the desired results. And that's one of our missions, is to develop self-esteem through this artistic instruction. And
kids
gain a lot of confidence. They perform throughout the year. In fact, we have a very busy spring with kids performing in February. Our concert choir is performing in March with the Ames Chamber Artists as part of their concert. And we have a Midwest Children's Choir Festival that we hold in April in C.Y. Stevens for several hundred Iowa singers. And then we have, of course, our spring concert in May. So we've got something going every month.
Well, thank you, Sean Stevenson. This is wonderful, the Ames Children's Choir. There will be a concert this Sunday, February 15th at 3 p.m. at Elam Lutheran Church, and here's how you get there. If you're going on Interstate 35, take the Randall exit, drive west about a mile and a half, and you're at the Elam Lutheran Church where you can hear the famous and wonderful Ames Children's Choir. Thank you, Sean.
Thank you, Paul.
Okay, have a good day.
Alrighty. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio 89.1, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa.
Our guests today have been Betsy Bowman, Susan Duke, Sean Stevenson, and Loris Olson, who interviewed Penny Brown Huber. Your hosts have been Paul Wearson and Susan Franson. The show today was engineered by Rebecca Brown.
Music you heard today was A Little Bit of Me by Melissa Etheridge. Art Thou Troubled, sung by the Ames Children's Choir in concert, and this may have been recorded at the Elam Lutheran Church. Our theme music is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
You can also listen to this show and all of our past local talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. where we are streaming live. You'll find recent shows on our homepage with links to the organizations and other sources mentioned on our shows.
If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends and consider becoming one of the 500 families donating $20 per month or $250 per year to help us meet our operating expenses, though we'd appreciate whatever fits into your budget. We'd also like to hear your feedback either by phone at 515-292-2878 or by email at khoiradio@gmail.com with news in the subject line, or stop in at the KHOI studios at 410 Douglas in Ames.
Your participation as audience and your generous donations are what make KHOI possible. Thank you for listening, and
see you again on the radio.
This is Loris Olson.
And this is Susan Franson.
We invite you to be with us on Wednesday, February 18th. We have invited the city managers from Nevada, Story City, Boone, and Huxley to talk about the opportunities and challenges of being located so close to Ames and the Des Moines metro area. We'll talk about budgets. We'll talk about citizen expectations. We will talk about the future of these vibrant communities.
Join us at 7 a.m. or at noon or at 7 p.m.
as Local Talk has a roundtable discussion with the people who run our neighboring cities.